Good afternoon. It's a Monday afternoon and it's a home run time. It's 4:33, 27 minutes left to the hour of 5. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Home Run with, in the words of Loise with Herumtana Dwaita. One thing I like about, pardon me, winter is that, well, flu kicks in, and as soon as flu kicks in, you know, I begin to sound like, you know, like someone with very big with muscles and, you know, and all that stuff. Well, I don't have any of that. But today is one of those days where we, nothing extraordinary happening apart from the whole, you know, Afrikaners and, you know, deciding to, some, not all of them, deciding to be refugees. And one thing I found fascinating about that whole story is that it turns out there were about 8,000 people, or more like 8,000 people that that applied for that opportunity, and only what, like 49 people that got accepted. Like, what were they looking for? Like, how, you know, like really, what were the criteria? Like, have some degree of whiteness. Okay, you know, this is not mind the game. It's not mind the game. Breathe, and just understand that this is a home run. So, and also, we are not talking about Africa in that way. Today, we are going to talk about, for those of you that have seen our poster, today we are talking about Africa, not really Africa per se, although the discussion is more, because we are in Africa, we will, you know, of course, everything is going to be rounded off to the nearest, you know, Africanness. So, today's discussion, is one about artificial intelligence, and artificial intelligence is something that we have talked about, you know, we have talked about a lot on this platform. We talk about it like all the time, except this one. The one for today is about the, we are going to talk about it in line with the human development report of 2025 that is coming from the United Nations Development Program. This is where we look at artificial intelligence and its, you know, and how we can employ. Well, obviously, every country is has a developmental plan, and human development. Now, these developmental plans, obviously, we want to achieve whatever goals that we have development wise, you know, as fast as we can. And obviously, the use of artificial intelligence in some of these developmental endeavors. We want to employ technology, and today technology, for the most part, at least to some degree, you know, implies the use of artificial intelligence. And we have talked about, I remember, I'm not sure if this is the time when Dwight was still off, I think, I'm not sure, when I talked about the International Energy Agency talking about the implementation of artificial intelligence in energy generation, and the application of artificial intelligence is wide and very many. Before I came here, the first thing that I did after going through the human development report of 2025 is I decided to have a conversation with AI. More like just one question, really, that I asked. And I used one of the large language models out there. And that's, a lot of people these days use ChatGPT. Some of us like to mix things up, you know, here and there. So I decided to go with DeepSeek. And the question that I asked was, what are some of the most common application of artificial intelligence in modern society? And in less than 1 minute, I ended up with 8 pages. Now, I was very specific to what I was looking for. Coming in is Dwight. Well, we're so glad he's not one of the 45 guys that hopped on a plane to be, you know, to the US on a refugee status. Bravo. Welcome back, buddy. 50.
50.
Yes.
50 people.
50.
Yeah, 50 that got refugee status. For what reason, I don't know.
Out of 8,000 applicants?
But here's the thing, Helmut.
Jeez, okay.
Here's the thing. You have to understand, in South Africa, they've got an ugly misinformation campaign. There's a lot of ugly misinformation happening there. I don't want to sound like a pure scientist, because I might, in some cases, become borderline offensive. You know, obviously dissecting the not so intricate talking points from that 50 refugee status discussion, because you've got to ask yourself, what war is South Africa under? What conflict exists for America to accept 50 refugees?
Well, you know one thing,
No, it's a stark realization. Before you go in there, remember, keep in the back of your mind when you make that sentence, when you finish that sentence, think about those Namibians who went to the UK and applied for asylum status.
Because Namibia is under what?
Supposedly.
Some type of political instability.
Or we weren't supposed to. Look, asylum status can only happen when there's conflict.
Uh-huh.
Ask yourself, what conflict is there?
Is Namibia in?
Yes.
Now, you see, one thing I've come to learn is that a lot of those Namibians that found themselves in the UK, at least it's safe to say the majority that were saying when they need asylum because, well, which would imply in a diplomatic or political lingo that Namibia is in some kind of political instability.
Yeah.
The majority of those people were black. Now, one thing I've come to learn is that, turns out, This one.
You just had to rub it in. I was avoiding those statements.
No, that's you.
You went and took out the salt and the wound is open and you went like that.
Look,
there.
Let's just say, this time, white people, it's your turn to go out there and...
But let them, look, the only thing is, Helmut, there's about how many, when you look at South Africa statistics, there's about 10 million, I think 12 million white people in South Africa,
mm-hmm.
10 million ish colored people, and then you break all the other particular groups up in terms of, you know, the ethnicities. So you've got Venda, you've got Zulu, you've got Khoza, you've got, what's the other one, Matabele. You break all those guys up, but they literally will be the other 40 million of South Africa. Now ask yourself, 50 refugees in 10 million people. Ask yourself that question. 50, 50, not 50,000, not 50 million.
Yes, 50.
50 straightforward. Refugees.
Well, and also you have to look at, this whole thing can take, it's an entire discussion on its own.
Yeah.
First of all, after that, you know, that the 10 million. Population, mm. just the give or take that he just gave,
mm.
and you see how many people applied for this status. It's about 8,000 that applied?
But in the global discussion of immigration, it was the United States that created the civil war in Syria.
Yeah.
The Europeans didn't want Syrian refugees, but they allowed their largest NATO stakeholder, under Barack Obama, to destabilize Syria.
Yeah.
The whole issue of Brexit, comes because of Syrian refugees and Afghan refugees.
So you are running around creating problems and hoping there are no consequences out of it. Oh, that's
the,
nice.
The resurgence of, the resurgence now in Europe and in North America of right-wing politicians. They call them right-wing, meaning In pure basic format, Helmut, these are
like conservative guys.
Well, they call them conservative, but in most cases they play either racism politics or they play class politics. So first and foremost, much of these politicians, like the Nigel Farage from the UK, who's mm-hmm. from the Reform Party, who was one of the proponents of Brexit, they were driving the card because the EU told the UK, you must take your quota of Syrian and Afghan refugees. And they were like, no, how dare you tell us? How it is stipulated as a fact that the whole Brexit process began because of Afghan and Syrian refugees. They didn't want to accept their quota of Afghan and Syrian refugees.
After destabilizing the regions?
After destabilizing the region, after destabilizing Iraq, then destabilizing Syria, then almost partially destabilizing Egypt, because Egypt was destabilized. Egypt was. So here's what happened in Egypt. Egypt went from military dictator, gets destabilized. They get in a civilian president,
mm-hmm.
and then they go what? This business of trying to reform the economy to work for the Egyptian citizen. Nah, we go back to military dictatorship, and that was the picture of Egypt.
Yeah,
I know. I don't know if the Egyptian embassy listens, but anyway, anyone would know. But that's the picture that happened. They went like Hosni Mubarak for like 30, 40 years of rule.
Yeah.
They have a half a year, 6 months or a year or 2 year thing for what's the guy's name? Morsi. Yeah, Morsi. And then Morsi gets overthrown, thrown into jail by the now incumbent president, who was himself also just a general of the army. And it comes out that specifically the Egyptian economy in some way is slightly artificial because the Egyptian army gets $100 million every single year from the American economy.
What are you subsidizing is a very good question.
Exactly.
Very good question.
And this is an economy now that produces oil and gas.
And that's painful.
They sell oil and gas. Now ask yourself, what's going on the ground?
Like,
how do you not have resilience? What's going on the ground? And this is a North African country, one of the leading economies supposedly on this continent. And that's why continents like, economies like Nigeria and, Kenya and South Africa look very much more resilient because there's much more activity. You see more diversification in economic activity present in those three economies that I just mentioned. But the moment you get, even that's just the reason what's the guy's name from Burkina Faso, Traore, is trying to do. Traore as a soldier is seeing that his economy needs diversification so that the everyday Burkinabe can have an opportunity of
to participate,
of having opportunities in their economy. The dumb side of everything is that their whole monetary policy was being determined by the French Central Bank. Their fiscal policy was determined by the Ministry of Finance of France. Because they voted...
Like at this point, why do we even have you here at home as a Minister of Finance then?
They voted back in the 1950s when Charles de Gaulle, the Second World War General of France...
Military.
Became President of France. And they put a referendum to all these African countries from France. They sent a referendum to the political leadership.
That's the one that that Sokou Touré of Guinea-Conakry refused and things didn't go well.
Yeah. And they were asked on the ground, do you still want to be part of the French Republic? The French Republic comes with benefits, but the French Republic puts you literally at a second
a province, basically.
Yeah, but you as a Namibian, you become a second-class citizen because you don't have the full rights of a Frenchman who's in France. You don't have the same rights because your constitution technically has to be approved by the constitution of France.
Now,
so the constitution you're sitting with, once again, is just waste.
Written and approved somewhere else.
Yeah, it's just waste.
But here at home, you have, you have a judiciary branch that's supposed to be making everything up. A lot of things at this point becomes very artificial.
Yeah, but here's the thing also, Elmo. That's why I highlighted with the start when you highlighted that you are happy that I'm not one of the 50 that got asylum. Firstly, I didn't apply yet for my second, for my dual citizenship from South Africa. But still, misinformation is a great, great evil in this country.
Oh, it's working.
There's a whole bunch of videos that are on YouTube supposedly somewhere of Namibia kicking out, foreigners. Do you know what it's about?
Mm-hmm.
The video.
What's it about? No.
It's just about us and the reciprocity of the
visa.
The introduction of the e-visa. But it's the one channel is from an Ethiopian lady. The other one is from a bunch of guys here somewhere in West. And you should see the misinformation that they're spouting.
misinformation.
Bruh! I'm flabbergasted. But yeah, you were still on a point, Elmo.
Yeah, I sat here the whole morning rambling about that. You know, especially, I decided to put much more emphasis on the misinformation part. And, this is where actually, double checking whatever that you are watching before sharing it, for the love of God, double check it. Because, well, you may as well just become a robot at this point, and we already have AI for that. Now, speaking of which, now let's get to the AI discussion. Now, before we took that detour, I already laid the introduction here that today we're talking about artificial intelligence in line with the that's in line with the Human Development Report of 2025. That was produced together with the United Nations Development Plan. And I pointed out that before I start, one of the things that I did before, while putting all these things, putting today's material together, was that I decided to ask one of the artificial intelligence, I don't want to say individuals because, well, they're not human beings. One of those artificial intelligent tools. That's DeepSeek, about some of about just a few of the applications of artificial intelligence in modern society. And in just less than a minute, I came up. I ended up with 8 pages that just outlined some of the very few things were more like in summary of the applications of artificial intelligence in modern society. And this implies that artificial intelligence in, development, let's just start with the development. Development itself is a very broad subject. Every country wants to develop. Part of development programs, for example, for Namibia is we want, rural electrification and everyone to have access to housing. And also one of our biggest problem as a country, especially when it comes to food security, is that, we're a semi-arid country. That means we don't have the type of rainfall that is that you find in most parts of Central Africa, because, well, they are equatorial rain region. Now, because of that, when you talk about artificial intelligence and and the role it plays in development, you are talking about two different and yet very broad subjects that are supposed to complement each other. Because development means access to water, electricity, health facilities, education, making everything incorporating technology in everything, that is from education, farming, medicine, and all that. And modern day, in modern day discussions, when you talk about it, when you talk about technology, you are already talking about artificial intelligence in that one subject. Those 8 pages that DeepSeek decided to lecture me on the modern on the application of artificial intelligence in modern society. One was there's application of artificial intelligence in medicine and then in energy generation, and we had I or we talked about that, the incorporation of artificial intelligence in energy generation. We talked about that by using, some of the sources from the International Energy Agency. And also the artificial intelligence has its applications in medicine, energy generation, agriculture. You have education, you have climate change forecasting in terms of natural disaster, and justice dispensation also falls in there. That is just to name a few. So the incorporation of artificial intelligence in our development programs is one of those discussions that, if you ask me, are very broad. Take, for example, just take one of those aspects that DeepSeek decided to throw my way. Take education, for example. The application and implementation of artificial intelligence in education can go, you know, can become a whole discussion on its own, both on the teacher side and the learner side.
Mm.
So, let's talk artificial intelligence in line with the, you know, with the in line with the human development with the human development 2025 report.
It's actually interesting, Hamoud, that in this report, it starts from a particular perspective of understanding what this thing is. Now, I don't like using myself as a particular sort of like a metric, but the AI training in journalism that I took earlier this year for like 6 weeks, we did this. The first thing we were told in the first particular engagement was this is a tool.
Yeah.
Don't think of it as it is going to replace you. And when we did the future of jobs, a discussion, remember from the World Economic Forum, the first thing that was also highlighted in there was that you've got to look at which kind of jobs will be replaced, and most of them are the frontline jobs. Which was also safe to say that us, you know, us radio presenters and personalities and discussions and, you know, even the stand-up comedians and you know, slash the writers and journalists, mm-hmm. we're not on that list.
Thank heavens.
So there was a list that showed a spectrum starting from those that would be eliminated or replaced by this process, and those that would greatly rely on this process.
Yeah.
At the heart of everything is what people have to realize, that this is a tool, an instrument for usage, an instrument to be used in conjunction with your current processes. It's a tool about how to speed up processes, for that matter. If you're going to ask who's going to bake the cake, it's not going to be the AI. Please, it's still going to be you mixing the stuff, but the AI probably will tell you what the percentages are of your ingredients that you have to incorporate in the final mixture of the cake to go and literally bake the thing in the oven.
You still have to be responsible for the logistics of moving from the one tool to another.
Exactly. You will still be that guy. AI won't be driving the car for you. No, that's self-driving things. And then you've got to ask the question from that is, literally, would you then have to spend money to buy a car if the car can drive itself?
Nah.
Exactly. Which actually means speaks to a savings. But
I'm
that's...
telling you, you know, 20... let me just say... 5 years of, you know, 5 years of self-driving car implementation, you're going to have a problem. You know, you're going to have a problem. Okay, if you have a manual car,
yeah,
forget about anyone stealing it. It's you, you know, your
car. Yeah, it's almost an anti-theft device, the manual car. Okay, that's the Americans in the UK, guys, presenting.
Yeah, because here we still, you know, here it's still part of the your driving test, especially, yeah. I mean, you can take it, you can take, actually, it's one that's recommended.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in the particular broader scheme of things, you even see much of the car manufacturers are now pushing automatic the version of the car. They're mm-hmm. pushing an automatic gearbox into the car. So this ultimately speaks of that they are busy with economies of scale on their side.
Yeah.
The car manufacturer. But we're not here to talk about them. We're here to talk about the Human Development Index.
Yeah.
Because in this particular scenario, Helmut, the HDI, because the article that we've got in today's The Villager eBaver platform, and in Friday's edition as well, there are two different ones. The one today's one is about Namibia and starts off from Namibia. The one about Friday has the global look to the report itself.
Yeah.
But merging the two articles together, you get a pretty broad picture. You can start from anywhere, you know, from Namibia or from international base. Now, if we start from a Namibia perspective, Helmut, Namibia sits in position 136. Above us is Cape Verde. Now, it's the same particular analysis that I also gave Happy earlier today on the radar. But if you look at what the Human Development Index consists of, it takes life expectancy, meaning from when you are born to the longest life that a human can live in your country.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the What is the recommended amount of time you're supposed to stay in educational, in the educational system, meaning being exposed to school? And they're not, and I realized from much of the counting, they factor in some of university exposure or higher education exposure. And then you also factor in the, what is the actual exposure in the education system per person in your country. And then this is correlated with the gross national income. Now, GNI, Helmut, is a different perspective of GDP. Remember, GDP is what the value, or GDP per capita is the value of each Namibian's production in the country. But I've told you, do not look at that thing, because that is a misleading statement to use, because you have to look at what industries are the ones responsible for the GDP.
And so the ones that are contributing to that, to that number.
Yeah. And GDP, remember, is what you are exporting.
Oh.
Now,
Exporting then, that's a good thing, right? Because exporting entails that you are producing something.
Yeah. But from what industries are you producing? And that's predominantly mining.
Extractive,
It's predominantly mining and fishing. And it's not even to say that our agriculture, through the red meat supply that we sell to North America, to China, and to the EU, is a big contributor. In most cases, it's usually the mining sector. But before we continue, we've got an ad break creeping up on us.
You know, you could have just stopped at, what you are producing, just there to go to the biggest contributor, which is extractive, making it even more depressing. But before that, commercial break.
Are you still buying data hoping it will last? Then switch to Paratus. Buying gigabytes is so old school. With our mobile LTE prepaid packages, you take charge as we invest in time on our network, enjoying the freedom of uncapped data. When you buy a 1-day, 7-day, 14 or 30-day package, you get uncapped data usage. For duration of the package, no matter how much data you use. Explore our range of Paratus mobile LTE prepaid packages and enjoy the speeds of up to 10 megabytes per second. And most importantly, remove the uncertainty about how long your data will last. Contact us today at 083-300-1000 or visit our website at www.paratus.africa/Namibia. Terms and conditions apply.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
The time is 1700 on the dot, if you want that prefer military time, but it's 5 o'clock for those of us that are civilians.
Those that are regular Joes and Janes, you guys.
Yeah, I think we have to update the Joes and Janes to, less Namibians that, for those of you that are regular Nangolo and Angulas, that fits perfectly.
Are those the two most common names you can think of?
Yep.
Okay. Anyway, I was still on the misleadingness of GDP and GNI. Now, GNI actually is the reversal of GDP. You just take GDP and you distribute it technically across your total population size. That's what the GNI technically has done. So it's just a reversal. So supposedly, Namibia's overall GNI, gross national income, is $10,900 per year, per person. But $10,900 converts to 200,000 Namibian dollars. Now go and ask yourself, Helmut, have you seen 200,000 Namibian dollars in your bank account aggregately, as an aggregate, which is a collective amount, in 2024? You would find yourself being very far off from that indicator, right?
Way too far. Yeah.
Now, go and ask yourself particularly the question in terms of, that's the first thing I first asked, because it's the first thing I looked up. What is GNI, gross national income? And gross national income is tied once again to an extractive, to a misleading particular statistic and statement from Namibia's economy in terms of what we export out. Now, ignoring that, look at the human development factors. Now, the human development industries in Namibia are education and health. So, life expectancy is greatly associated to health standards or access to health.
Yeah.
Namibia has it at, wow, we've got a, is it 70, 70 something? Because I know it's 73 for that matter. But the scariest thing is the exposure to the education sector. Why? Do you know what is Namibia's highest number of being exposed or the most common total amount of years being in school, Helmut? 7.3 years.
That's like dropping out in grade 7.
It's like dropping out halfway through grade 8. 7.3 years. Cape Verde, Cabo Verde, mm-hmm. has a higher amount than us. They have less people than us, I understand that. But they have a higher amount. Helmut, our labor force survey of 2023 showed us a scary picture. The one that you and I did at the start of this year, the particular discussion. In that labor force survey, you not only, remember, you not only highlighted that there's a whole cluster of people just earning $1,000 a month in this particular consumer earnings capacity, but we also realized that there's only 500,000 people with jobs. In that 500,000 people with jobs, if you looked at their education level, the most prominent level or the most common level
mm-hmm.
is greatly just people either having been in secondary school or at least having finished grade 12. That number even becomes scarier when you've got to look at the people that ultimately have vocational training, the skilled people that we need for economic upliftment. These particular factors are scary stuff.
You know, now that you're bringing up the, you know, our labor force survey and the earnings of a lot of people that make up, that make up that employed category, that shows one scary picture, and that is one of even if you, you know, even if you are classified as employed, that mm-hmm. also raises another question of how much do you earn,
yep.
and is it enough to, you know, is it enough to, is it enough to go by? And the link that I think is the last link that I shared with you on one, one video that I was looking at that I found on YouTube on the, you know, the global housing crisis.
Mm.
And that is,
Oh, the prefabricated houses.
Not the prefabricated house. Basically the increase in the cost of housing.
Yeah.
Both buying and renting.
Well, the tagline of the video said, China can solve the housing crisis for the world.
That's where the prefab discussion
comes in. Yeah, that's where prefab, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, one thing that you see there is, one source that the gentleman referenced was a website known as, Nambio, which is a Serbian crowdsourced online database. It's the biggest, cost of living database, and it's crowdsourced. Now, it's a very beautiful website. Talk about AI.
Mm.
Because if you just go on that website and then they have a search bar that all you just have to do is type in the city that you want to look for. Because while I live in Windhoek, I decided to type in Windhoek and then it pops up Windhoek, Namibia. And then it brings up a bunch of information about, the cost of restaurants on, the average cost of restaurants per person and per two people, both for, from high end, middle range and, and the low end ones. You have markets, you have transportation, you have utilities, sports and childcare, clothing, shoes, rent and everything. Because I'm not an expert at fact checking, so that's why I decided to, as soon as I got that one, I decided, I'm like, oh, hang on a second. I have Dwight in my inbox. There you go. Tag you it. So, then it just goes to show you that, take, for example, when you go to the housing section, buy apartment, then you go to salaries. Average salary monthly. Am I serious?
Yep. It's a bloodbath.
And when you look at, okay, now just my technology is not technology here. Then you look at clothing rent, but child care, preschool, full day, private, monthly per one child, 3,000.
Yeah, it's another killing. It's another killing that's happening out there.
It's another killing. But that's something that we're gonna dive in just in a few after the quick break.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the only person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. It's 9 minutes past the hour of five. So moving on.
Sorry about that.
COVID-25. That very same website, if you just scroll all the way to the bottom, just above the pie chart, you'll see that, moving to Windhoek, explore quality of life, crime in Windhoek, healthcare in Windhoek, population in Windhoek, property prices. I'm like, how the hell is this information, this detail, coming from Serbia?
Because, Helmut, we have become a hotspot. Specifically, what I mean by hotspot is because we've become more prominent out there. And it's specifically one of them. You've got to look at that e-visa development.
Yeah.
Because I would love the Ministry of Home Affairs to tell us every month. Actually, I'm going to go write them an email after the show. I'd like to know from them to just write a statement, which is stamped by them, just saying how much applications they got, how much were rejected, and what was the total value that they raked in terms of payments for these e-visas. Because for the first 30 days, 18 million is a shocking number. 18 million is a shocking number, Helmut.
For the first time, Namra is realizing they have a competitor.
Yeah, Minister of Home Affairs.
Oh, yeah.
And then the
Ministry of Mines is not loving this.
No, but Minister of Mines is making ridiculous amounts of money that they literally reflect as a, as a positive economic influence.
Oh dear.
And that is just through exploration and paying for licensing and paying for the, what was that survey?
Seismic.
The seismic survey. I mean, 300 million, Helmut, for a seismic survey.
300 million
is no joke.
Before you apply for a mining license.
Before you even get...
Ask yourself one question. Do you have 300 million?
Never. Ask me, will I see it ever? And that's in... Is it in US or in Namibian dollars?
That's in Namibian dollar. Thank heavens.
Yeah.
At least partly.
Partly, yeah.
Yeah.
So, if you look at those things, there's a lot of things that is speaking to Namibia's reputation and notoriety outside of Namibia.
Yeah.
But when we get into this human development discussion of things here on the ground for the average Namibian, because the average Namibian would want to know where our situation is going to. There's another scary thing to highlight. I've observed that two retailers have done like internal, renovations, facelifts of their floor plans. Yeah. I won't mention which two, but some would have seen there's one at Marua Mall. You'd have seen it. What they have done is the pay stations where the cashier is standing.
Mm.
It has a conveyor belt on it, but the conveyor belt is not yet functioning.
So we are still with bring it here.
No, we're still with bring it here because you still have to walk to that thing.
Yeah, just push it over.
The downside is, Hamut, I can slowly but surely see how some of the retailers would migrate to an easy access, a convenience discussion. South Africa's not there yet, But the scary thing is that the South Africans probably are also considering this, you know, the headquarters of most of these retailers.
Yeah.
In terms of bringing in the automated checkout systems, which is in the US. Now, it feeds into potentially, do you try and train that cashier? Probably only has a grade 10. And I know that an argument has been made on some cases here on Eagle FM, sometimes coming from our listeners, but sometimes also highlighting certain particular things. But then that labor force survey made things 100% clear. We unfortunately have too many people, Helmut, in the Namibian economy that don't have adequate levels of education level. Remember that there have been accusations of that there are Namibians that are stuck on like that 1,000 Namibian dollar level to just be below it, 5,000 Namibian dollar level. But they've worked for many of these particular shops and businesses for like 5, 6, 7 years, but they don't see themselves progressing. The unfortunate thing is, it's because you probably have a grade 7. You probably have a grade 10 only, or you probably have just a grade 8. And even the HDI proves this, the Human Development Index.
Yeah.
Because they looked at the most recurring number. The word that they use here, Helmut, is the mean years of schooling. Mean, the word mean, mean mode and medium.
Yeah.
Mean mode and median. Sorry, not medium. Median. The one has to do with the most recurring number of value that you see.
Basically, statistic and probability.
Yeah. But it's before you get to probability work calculations. This is mean, mode, and median are looking at the most recurring number, the center or the middle point of these numbers, and then the average of these numbers. But before that, we've got an ad break coming up, and then we'll get back after it.
Do you urgently need cash and happen to own a car? Creditors delaying and contractors need to be paid? When life throws you a rainy day, AutoCash got your back. Park your car and get up to 45% off its value within 45 minutes. No payslip, no bank statement, just the car. Moolah when you need it.
Money.
Call us today on 061-400-676. That is 061-400-676. AutoCash. It's that simple.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is EagleFM Namibia.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Welcome back, but before we continue, let's take a live read.
This is Velvice University, where everyone is an achiever. Online, for online qualifications for the postgraduate programs for the June 2025 intake, the application process is open. Velvice University is inviting applications into the below mentioned online postgraduate programs for June 2025 intake. For more information, you can also, and for applications, you can visit our website at www.wu.edu.na. The courses are Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety, Level 8, and this is where for you to enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 7 qualification in a related field. This is a one-year blended course. Master of Occupational Health and Safety. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 8 qualification in a related field, and this is a two-year blended course. Postgraduate Diploma in Higher Education Level 8. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 7 qualification in a related field, and this is a one-year blended course. Master of Higher Education. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 8 qualification in a related field, and this is a 2-year blended course. All programs are fully accredited by the NQA.
And welcome back.
So, if you look at the education factor, for that matter, Helmut, mm-hmm. Yes, I am going to be a little bit brutal on us, on our fellow Namibians, because this is no longer a discussion of just youth employment. This is a discussion of overall employability and employment. Helmut, I've continuously made statements regarding that we are sitting with skilled Namibians, Namibians that have masters, PhDs, honors degrees, that are sitting at home, who are trying to establish themselves as business people or being knowledge workers or consultants in the economy. Mm. And COVID came along and it has wrecked it for them for the past 5 years up until today. The misalignment in terms of priorities to say, okay, we should just focus on the youth. But if you realize that the youth only has a grade 7, only has a grade 10, only as
a to bring them to the, you know, to the level where they are employable.
But that's the thing, Helmut. Why should you, you already brought the horse to the watering hole. Now you have to supply, now you have to bring the lucerne to the watering hole. You have to bring the salt stone to the watering hole. You have to bring the sleeping bag and the fire and everything to make that horse so comfy. Why are you going to such extent? And this is also how you could probably see how some of the particular, you know, the politicians that are providing these or making these statements of, we will provide the youth with jobs. But the youth can't even get into, for example, Helmut, like holiday jobs in the retail sector. They can't because there are other Namibians sitting there that only had a grade 10. Now, where are you going to put that Namibian? Or where are you going to push them? Do you understand?
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do with this? Another issue that we also face in Namibia is potentially, Helmut, the aspect in terms of the rural to urban migration. That's another particular problem. Oof. Because we, and you and I know this already, in the rural areas, the education facilities are really not up to the scratch to try and instill opportunities in the rural areas. Now that young person moves to Windhoek. Now that young person just moves to Swakop or to Walvis Bay. Why is it that it's only 3 local authorities that have to cater for the whole of the country? Up until today, no one can come and say, you know, what is up with this dilemma? I've been trying to look for an article that was supposedly written by my sister a couple of years back for another publication that was here in Namibia. Was known as Sister Namibia, was the publication's name. And she did an insightful interview with but she heard about this phenomena. About, you know, these informal settlements, how they sometimes pop up, is that you've got people that are literally migrational. They hear of an opportunity in Windhoek, and then they come from somewhere, and they put up a quick shack here, and they stay there until they get the opportunity. If the opportunity doesn't come, then they just go back to where they came from. But then the shack stands there. And then you, the local, the city of Windhoek official or whatever official living in Windhoek, you see this as a permanent structure and you see, another shack came along. And it happens in Walvis and in Swakopmund. And so there is no fixed installation of these Namibians, but they move around a lot. If they see the opportunity doesn't come, they take a hike. And they go somewhere else, where the next supposed opportunity is.
Yeah.
And the migration is based upon, in most cases, hearsay. The migration is not based upon, no, there's a certain job for you here. Come today. Let me see you tomorrow. The person gets here. They have to wait here for a month and a half. If the opportunity doesn't happen, they pick up and they go.
Of moving from, this is something that you'll notice if you take, for example, mostly if you catch a cab somewhere around you know, 6:30-ish to 7 there.
Yeah.
Sometimes even 8.
Yeah.
You'll see that, whether you're the side of Osborne-Platz, especially here in Windhoek, or you are the side of Klein Windhoek, one thing that you see is that, there are a lot of people that are walking from either, you know, mostly from Marua Mall or from, a lot of these grocery stores here in Klein Windhoek, going to town, because it's much easier to catch a cab there to the, to your destinations. And a lot of these guys, and I really like how they do it, because a lot of them move in groups.
Yeah.
And that's obviously, for the most part, as you can assume, for security reasons, because most of the times when these grocery stores or stores close, it's mostly dark, especially this time, especially during winter.
Mm.
Now, what that goes to show is that, at least to me, is that I started observing this last week, and that's when the part of, the part about, alleviating the transport burden from the private sector by the public sector, started popping in my head. I'm like, okay, first of all, these people work halfway across town. Live halfway across town, but they work here.
Mm-hmm.
You have a lot of people that work, that are coming from places like Hunchback, for example, but they work in Prosperita.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll find a lot of these people on bicycles,
mm-hmm.
and some of them walk half the distance and maybe catch a cab for another, or they use the minibuses. But one thing that you see here is that, there is a transportation and housing problem.
Yeah.
A very big one.
There's a big public transportation issue.
Yeah.
And the affordable housing discussion.
Yeah, because as much as I live in, as much as I work in Klein Windhoek, I can afford to live in Klein Windhoek.
Mm.
So I live in Havana. Mm. Now, then I have to face the hassle of, every day. Now I have to face the hassle every day of moving from, from Korea Hub to Klein Windhoek. And it's when you knock off, it's late. And then another societal issue now kicks in. One of security.
Mm-hmm.
So you see that, by just solving one problem, take for example, one problem of transportation or of housing, you'll solve a lot of, a lot of societal issues that seems to be more like a knock on effect of this mega problem that is of transport, for example. So if you take, for example, affordable housing, then most people, believe me, most people that live in Korea Hub, a lot of those people will be living in Simbambasia.
Yep.
Because it's very closer to Prosperita.
Yep.
Compared to, Kahanja Park. Except, last time I checked, that part of town is one that digs a very deep hole in your pocket for you to live there. So a lot of people that work there can't afford to live there. So the question, this is one of those things that raises another, a giant developmental question. And obviously development is a multifaceted, more like a discussion, discussion of development, because development is looking at an overall goal that you'd like to achieve as a country, be it in medicine, in school, agriculture, housing, transportation and all that. The question now, according to this report, is how do you factor in artificial intelligence? Oh dear.
The downside is, Hamoud. Okay. We answered one part of it at the start, that it is as a tool. How do you bring in a Namibia's case?
Yeah.
If you have had too many Namibians that have only been exposed to 7 years of education, how do you upskill those Namibians to this level?
Yeah, good question. That brings us to, first of all, technological wise, this is not the first time that we are doing, we're doing this transition.
Yeah.
And also,
the world, not Namibia, saying the world.
Yeah, the world. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Because we're still struggling with 4IR in Namibia. We have not even achieved 4IR.
We're still struggling with airtime, buddy. Recharge. But look.
Yeah, that's a punchline. It had to come in somewhere.
Some of these things just pops up. But look.
Yeah, we are struggling with it.
Yeah. Look, the thing is, this is not the, well, it's a good thing you use the word tool in reference to artificial intelligence. And that's because if you look at take for example, the way that, telephone operators worked, there are people that could, you know, that were working to literally connect you to the individual that you are calling.
Mm.
You call the call center
and go
then
through
you go through a switchboard. Literally, someone is plugging a wire somewhere to plug it to the, to the area or area code of the place that you are calling.
Yep.
Those people are not there anymore.
Because they brought in, is it PABX or what is the system's name? It's literally just a box.
Yeah.
That just connects the number. If you know the extension of the number, mm-hmm. it just connects you to the extension directly, or you just call through the main. The switchboard is now technically just a big phone that has a lot of flashes.
It was an entire hall of people
of
that had been reduced.
Exactly. To just
to a
phone.
Box.
To a phone and a box.
That can fit on your table.
No, the box, that other box sits against the wall. It looks like a power box. With switches in it.
God dear Lord.
It looks like that, but it's usually gray because the electricity one is white. So it looks like that box. And then, if that's why they still have like what you call it, not receptionists. What are the people's name that receive the phone calls in many cases? The
what operator?
Not an operator, but it is a receptionist in most cases. Yeah, receptionist. That's why companies still have receptionists. But receptionists are also now going to be phased out because of AI, because now you can automate incoming calls.
But I really like receptionists.
Yeah, we all love receptionists. Yeah. Most cases, they are.
Really smoking hot. But,
okay, you went the other way. I was going to be like, they're very friendly people, you know? Very, very friendly people. But yeah.
Okay. You know,
you went for the smoking hot. Yeah. Helmut, you must understand, sometimes we have to include the PG-ness of, you know, in our discussions. But anyway,
yeah, let's take thank heaven, saved by a commercial break. We'll continue on the other side. Home run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM.
So Windhoek Beer asked Namibia to be real, and we got 500,000 responses from Racina and the other 1,400 who are Crocs with socks. 10,000 peeps like T-Boss, whose nicknames are their real names. And 2,100 with the chops to master a braai like Arnold. It doesn't get more real than that. As Windhoek, the real beer for real people, we recognize the 100% real. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Where was I? Not the receptionist.
You were
but
talking about the smoking hotness of the receptionist. Even though you're trying to deny it.
Don't push it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Now, the implementation of tools is something, okay, you have to understand that we have been developing tools for a very long time.
Yeah.
You know, golden age, iron age, all these things. We have been developing tools to develop our, to make our lives easier.
Yeah.
Only that civilization, technological-wise, have become so advanced. Now we're talking, we have listeners that are listening to us through device boxes that we have also invented as a tool.
Now, and an application.
Through applications, through websites, and all those things. Now, what usually happens is, there are a lot of people that are left behind, those ones that don't have the skills to, to complement the tool.
Yeah.
Take, for example, secretaries.
Yeah.
Secretaries were there to sort of like write everything down and file everything in, in hard copies. And then a computer was invented.
Mm.
Then Microsoft Office, among its other tools, became a thing.
Mm.
So secretaries who were able to keep up with the Microsoft suite type of tools still retained their jobs. Those who were not able to keep up were kind of difficult to keep. I mean, I want you to keep your job. But if you don't know where the difference between the window on a computer and the window on the building, we have a problem.
Yeah.
Artificial intelligence, on the other hand, is obviously going to be the same way. It's not going to be very different. A lot of people that are sort of like familiarizing themselves with how to align their skills with artificial intelligence, most likely, they have a better chance of surviving the artificial job grab. Now, and those of us that are saying, well, this is too complicated, it's not going to end well.
I mean, Helmut, even last week, I went to another particular event on Friday.
You and events. You keep running into people.
No, they invite me sometimes. Then they only invite me to be in the audience. They don't invite me to be one of the panelists or speakers.
That's a bad idea.
Yeah, well, I'll talk too much. That's the other thing. Or I will know too much to talk about.
You know, you will ask too much questions. That's a problem.
That too. We get to the particular discussion. It's about AI in journalism, for that matter. And one of the biggest problems, because the human development index, like you highlighted, we have to get to that discussion of how does the AI and human development in this 2025, what does it look like? This particular engagement back on Friday highlighted a unique discussion where there were two editors there, highlighting, how they catch out journalists that use ChatGPT or all the other AI platforms, mm-hmm. because the most common used one is supposedly ChatGPT to write their articles in. But then the sub-editors, now sub-editor Helmut is the person that checks the language and the style and all the other particular, the contexts and the overall idea of the product.
Yeah.
They're the ones that go through your script, through the copy, before it lands on the platform. So the sub editors go like, but I know Dwight didn't write like this polished last week.
Seriously?
What happened? Or the main point that they also highlighted specifically, like,
so he basically moved from Helm to Shakespeare, like,
exactly,
exactly. Under 24 hours, and everyone is like, mm-mm.
And everyone is like, how did Dwight's English improve like this so quickly, so rapidly in a week? And some of the other particular scenarios that they also highlighted is how they catch out how some of the journalists are also using AI is like the facts based in it. Meaning, the first presentation was done by the guy from the Deutsche Welle Academy, Peter De Sellers, and Peter highlighted that many of the journalists don't know, who are using AI, that AI can hallucinate.
Okay, you know, come up with stuff out of the
blue. Yeah, they fabricate things. Now, not every person was trained like Dwight has been trained, like mm-hmm. the discussion you and I also recently had at the start of this year about AI's particular takes and its impact. Not everyone has the fact verification or the fact checking abilities to go and see, did this really happen? Was this really a scenario? No, none of it. Some people just run wild with the thing gets posted there. You can see that the person's face is not in the thing. And just because I said here, this person fainted because of heat in a pool, not mentioning names, mm-hmm. and then you just run wild with the flames, you know? But it's not really a flame in your hand, it's literally just a picture of a flame.
Mm-hmm.
And you're running around with this.
And you're convinced it's flame.
It's a flame. You're convinced it's the Olympic flame, but it's not there, it's just a picture of the flame. Now, when you look at things like that, you realize that how quick it is to spread a negative message.
Yep.
And how quickly that negative message becomes a wildfire, a bushfire. You then get into the other discussion of things, for example, how some of the journalists, like the one person that is inverted commas editor, but the person is actually like an executive producer at the state broadcaster. She highlighted specifically that they've got it's a crime-based program, but the captions or the explainer, like the thing that we've got for our social media posts, for our posters, sometimes has an explainer for the reader, you know, for the listener going through our socials, and then they've got to read, what is this poster about? Even though we put it in the poster as well, there's still a small caption below it.
Yeah.
And then some of the things are like excited and happy, and it's like trying to instill some sort of an enthusiasm. But then it's about the content of the show is a crime-based show. You know, and crime is a serious subject.
Yeah.
Crime is not a fashion show or what's the other kinds of TV shows that they used to have? Or an interactive game show. It's not that
Jerry Springer.
No, Jerry Springer wasn't serious, Amos.
No, it wasn't.
No, Jerry Springer was serious with a lot of comedic elements.
Wait, that show was serious?
Yeah, it was serious. Jerry Springer was a lawyer, and then he was a former politician.
Why does it
become? And then he became a TV personality.
Why does it always have to be a lawyer? I mean, it's either a lawyer becoming a comedian and
because have you ever realized lawyers are fascinated by reality?
Oh yeah,
they are fascinated with reality, and predominantly that's just why lawyers are very close to historians. Historians and lawyers, they work close to each other. The traditional journalist is also the same. The journalist, the historian, and the lawyer, they work close with each other.
Same WhatsApp group.
Same WhatsApp group. All three of them despise politicians. Don't ask me why.
And also politicians don't like those guys.
They don't like these guys. But then the weird thing is when you come to Namibia, I don't know what happens to our journalists, but our journalists just go like, if you ask them, do you understand, you know, certain particular scientific processes, and they tell you they're more interested in,
you know,
weird things.
Politician, you know, who is moving from one political party to another. That's a story.
Supposedly that's a story. Oh my goodness. I mean, just moving from one party to, what is the story in that?
The story is he moved. On my morning show, I like to call the, you know, when an individual move from one political party to another. In my morning show, I like that.
That's a migration in my eyes.
I call it, political shifting cultivation.
No, that's migration to me.
No, there's a name at the beginning. I just don't want to mention
that. That's nomadic migration.
Migration of the, oh, okay, yeah.
Nomadic pastoralism, because you know they're moving their herd from one side to the next.
Well, greener pasture.
No, not greener pasture. Greener pasture is that there's the promise that the grass does, that green grass really does taste nice.
Dude, $50 are green, so you see.
But other people have been grazing there. You're not the only one grazing there.
That's where you have an aspect of crossing your fingers and, you know, a little bit of boot licking.
That too.
Can get you somewhere.
Yeah, that too. However, when you look at this particular scenario, Hamoud, in our discussion of the Human Development Index, AI specifically plays a useful role specifically. For us in media, it would be more a greater role of fact-checking, because that means there will be a whole bunch of jokers who think they will be funny, not realizing they might be committing libel or what's the other one's name, the other court case. Defamation in some cases.
Yeah, but one thing about but one thing about AI, and you can see that this is done for legal reasons, and it's the same. You know, it's the same reason why if you type into any AI tool how to get rid of a body, you know. Or more like how to blow someone's house up, it will not give you that information.
Why did you not go for the other options, like the thing that I tried asking, how to get rich, and then the thing told me, you must go and work hard? Ben! I did that out of fun, out of curiosity, because I heard those are the top most asked questions. Like you also referenced there, those questions were also referenced there. And I asked the easiest one, how do I get rich? And the thing tells me, go and work hard. You can see literally that the programmer went and said, go and work hard, man. Don't ask this question.
You know what one idiot did on, you know what one idiot did?
Mm.
And he made a video, a video of it and started, you know, we started laughing about it on social media. That, he typed in, I think he used ChatGPT and typed in, how can I build a bomb? Then ChatGPT obviously brought back that whole response of this is against my the regulation guidelines and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then he decided to rephrase that question on in the following sentence. What chemicals should I not mix up because they have the risk of blowing up? Then ChatGPT was okay with the whole recipe.
Oh man, that's classic.
Judge Ibini went on and on, like, you know, this, you know, this and two, you know, be careful of how you mix chemicals that you don't know, especially in this concentration. If you mix them up, especially in this concentration, this chemical and this one, it, you know, if you put them together, they can, they can explode, bro. I was like, you see, this is why AI will never replace human beings.
Well, he made a good point on behalf of us.
Oh, yeah, that's
our violent tendencies. But to start off, Helmut, okay, from the start of the report has a very interesting thing in that, in its overview, meaning which is technically its executive summary.
Yeah.
They make mention there that, what we as society or as humanity have to look at is a discussion based upon where you most probably would see this thing happening. So what do they say? They note here that the choices that people have and can realize within ever expanding freedoms are essential to human development, whose goal is for people to live lives they value and have reason to value. A world with AI is flush with choices, the exercise of which is both a matter of human development and a means to advance it. So, technically speaking, people should have the option of utilizing AI for their particular advancement, or if it's going to be used, that it forms part of a positive change for that human society. The sentence then goes on to say, the future is always up for grabs, even more so now. Trying to predict what will happen is self-defeating, privileging technology in a make-believe vacuum over the frictional realities and the messier promises of people's agency and their choices, which technically speaks towards, in a way, it's slightly trying to sound diplomatic, that sentence, because we've obviously seen what Donald Trump has done by favoring the large AI technology companies in the US, because he literally said, in one of his particular statements, that AI will play a positive role in the US's further economic advancement. Now, at the height of that particular scenario, which this report also zones in on, is to say, listen, don't favor industry over human development, which is the same thing in Namibia. Don't favor industrial development over human development. Don't put the one below the other.
Yeah, but from the look of things, especially, it's very easy, if you look at it from a monetization perspective, it's very easy to favor industry over the human development.
But here's the other scenario as well, Helmut. That is the discussion we had last year. Remember the OpenAI discussion where, what was his name? ChatGPT's guys, the OpenAI guys had the open research that research report we did about the aspect of a basic income grant.
Oh, yeah. When some of the jobs have been taken over.
Yeah. They literally commissioned research. The OpenAI guys. They literally commissioned research to find out, okay, some of these jobs are taken away, because you've got Americans, and they were just looking at the United States, but they referenced our universal basic income grant, but it was a conditional one. It was hosted in somewhere in the Otjothonjupa region. They highlighted that basic income grant, and they highlighted the same mechanism that was used in Brazil. And those two, according to them, those two particular systems were successes. Even though some of the rumors that came out regarding those programs being used is that the local community members, since they saw they were getting money every month, they were like, okay, let me go and spend a little bit on some alcohol. But obviously the local, you know, alcohol dispenser or entrepreneur would be seeing a surge in profits because there's more free money flowing about.
Plus there's more free time. I'm not working anymore.
Yeah.
Now, plus, it's guaranteed to come.
Yeah. Now, what Sam Altman's report looked at, and dear listeners, don't worry, I still have that report, but Helmut and I, we did it here about October, September last year. In that report, that it's open research something, I know, because it's associated to open AI. they realized that to appease what you've taken away from the society, some of these particular jobs, you've got to appease them because some of these guys will not be able to be retrained. Even though statistically you can retrain any person before 66 or 65. Mm. The discussion obviously has been there. We've also positioned artificial constraints in the economy. Like in our economy, many people are now told you must retire by 59. You can't retire on 60.
Why?
Because you'll be hit with a larger tax bill. So the previous level that was there, 65, everyone retired in 64. Huh. And you shouldn't have become 64 already. It's in the year that you become 64. So these particular nuances, these particular discussions, now they're telling some people in other economies, like in Japan, like in Europe, no, or like in France, what happened in France?
Oh yeah, the whole protest thing.
The protest about the pensions where Macron wanted back in 2023.
He had to extend the retirement age.
His plan was extend the retirement age and the French were like, Abba, hello, why must I work 10 more years?
Knowing the French, he really didn't read his history.
10 more years and they were unhappy.
Oh yeah, they were.
Now, here's the particular discussion. Namibia will go down the same route, Hamoud. We will. We will literally go down the same route.
Which one?
That specific route of having to readjust the retirement age.
Yeah.
Because it's because the government brought in such a mechanism, then the private sector also decided, you know what, all you guys in the private sector, you guys also have to resign at 59, eh? Just making you.
You know, just,
but you're supposed to work and you can work until 65.
But it gives you time to go and chill with the grandkids.
If you say so,
the discussion of the declining family.
That too.
Structure, yeah. So we are looking at a very lonely, bleak future, aren't we?
We are. Because the discussions highlighting, the population growth, and I've seen that, those presentations that I've had, yeah. where a lot of the guys were saying, you guys can already see these population declines happening in places like Japan and South Korea.
Oh, Japan has it bad.
Korea has it worse.
Really?
Yeah.
It's Japan that has it worse.
Japan's one shows is a mixture of urban-rural migration because there are a lot more schools are closing down in the rural areas.
Because a lot of people are moving to the urban
To the urban areas. Yeah. In Korea's scenario is that many of the women, because of Korean culture, have said, no, I will either postpone having a child or postpone having marriage or everything. What people don't realize is that we've got cultures that are, unfortunately for the term, is very toxic. But before we continue, we actually have to take a short, another live read.
All right.
Yeah. This is a Velvicia live read. Velvicia University live read. Velvicia University, where everyone is an achiever. Postgraduate programs for the June 2025 intake application process is open. Velvicia University is inviting applications into the below mentioned online postgraduate programs for the June 2025 intake. For more information and applications, you can visit our website at www.wu.edu.na. Postgraduate Diploma in Project Management Level 8. This for the applicant to enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 7 qualification in a related field. This is a one-year blended course. Master of Project Management. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 8 qualification in a related field. 2 years blended course. Postgraduate Diploma in Monitoring and Evaluation. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 7 qualification in a related field. This is a one-year blended course. Master of Monitoring and Evaluation. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 8 qualification in a related field. And this is a 2 years blended course. Postgraduate Diploma in Business Administration Level 8. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 7 qualification in a related field, and this is a one-year blended course. All programs are fully accredited by the NQA.
Welcome back. Well, with the Human Development Report and the implementation of AI, there's something I found that you will also find interesting. That's under examining the demand side of artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
The key reason to consider the user side of artificial intelligence is that historically the impact of technological innovation on improving productivity and increasing living standards has depended on complementary changes in the organization of economic activity, not simply replacing older technology with newer ones.
Yeah, because first and foremost, you'll first have disruptions.
Yeah.
Secondly, there will be further impacts of that disruption. For example, just look at what happened with Trump's particular. And I'm using a process. I'm talking about a process.
Yeah.
You're highlighting obviously in this discussion a technology replacement.
Yeah.
A process that once said, yes, if you're a foreign student, you could study in the United States and you could bring your wife and your child with. This obviously means that this is a person that is above 25 in most cases. Now that process has been reversed, saying even though you are legally in the United States, the immigration officials from the United States can literally come and round you up in the middle of the night, deport you, or send you to El Salvador with your family, and you were legally there. You had a visa. You had everything. You paid for your accommodation and all that.
Yeah.
So that is a process. What that process has created, it has now created so much disruptions. Now I'm just giving you a case study of a process disruption or technological disruption. People don't know for how long this will go on. The assumption is, look at, it'll continue for the next 5 years from this year into the next 4 years to follow after this year.
Mm-hmm.
And the disruptions will be, you know, they will be impactful. Now, when you look at a technological discussion of things, of side of things, Helmut, AI has been in existence for so long, more than 20 years. Many people are thinking that this AI thing is something new. It sprung up last year. No, it didn't. No, it didn't. I constantly use the Google search bar option as an example for everyone. That is an AI. How did you know that Google was going to give you 10 million options for the search option of the color blue? How did you know? You didn't know. But you know what? The founders of Google thought ahead. They were like, okay, we need to have something based upon a command that needs to go find as much options for you. Yes, we know, Helmut, you won't go to page 10,000 of the option view page, but at least we want you to see the first three, the first five options, the first five pages of that option. And then the Google founders invented the thing known as the search engine, and a search engine deploys spiders, not the actual spider, spiders that run across the internet when you search in latest Man United news. And it runs everywhere on the internet. And then it goes and collects all those sources, and it stipulates you from the freshest, from newest, to the oldest.
Although from main news, main server.
Doesn't matter. It could be from BBC, Sky CNN, Sports.
Everyone covering the event.
It could be from Supersport from South Africa. It doesn't matter where it is. It could even be. And that's just in English. You don't even know what the Spanish options are. You don't even know what the French options are or the Chinese options. That's just the English options. So AI has been there for a long time. AI is literally code. I've been explained to how the guys that are trying to do, what's the thing's name? The programmers. One of the reasons why I stopped the programming thing that I said last year. Now, I really just want to read more about programming. Né? But one of the things that I went and read up is that I started seeing videos of programmers on YouTube in the US and in the European Union complaining that these guys went and developed AI that can code. So why would you then need to send your child here to NUST or to UNAM to go and study software programming or software engineering? Yes, they can still study the course, but if there's an AI that can literally write code. And I saw the thing in motion in that training that I had. I saw the thing in motion.
So basically what we are talking about is for illustration's sake, a bunch of cleaners came together and came up with a vacuum cleaner.
Exactly. But these are five vacuum cleaners from one community that has negatively impacted the whole economy. Yeah,
everyone is like, okay, first of all, thank you very much. But now that I have a vacuum cleaner, I don't need you. Here is your paycheck. Bye.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
So the impact, yes, you are right. The technological impact and disruption will still be there. But I come back to fundamentals in terms of what the human can sort out. Helmut, Germany, in that discussion of education exposure.
Yeah.
Now, every Namibian that's now listening to us will ask the question at the first half of the discussion we had. Every Namibian will ask us, so if we've only have got Namibians that only spend 7.3 years of their time in school, why are we then investing so much into the education complex of Namibia? Which is a very valid question, Helmut, because in most cases, it does look like we are wasting taxpayer money.
Because people are going to drop out. I mean, you can't throw in a towel.
Exactly. But the hope is literally a scenario of you were hoping because we are committing so much financial resources to the one of the key sectors in developing the human capital of your country, is that you were hoping for at least an 80% pass rate at grade 12. We're not seeing that. We are not seeing that.
Okay, now when we look at the amount, the level of investment we have thrown into the, take for example, the education sector.
Yeah.
And, from 1990 to today, is there an increase in the number of, is there a decrease in the, how to put this, a decrease in the number of dropouts, or is there an increase in the number of dropouts? Or take, for example, are you getting your investments, are we getting our investments worth of this money?
But that's not the scenario, Helmut, because we're not getting like truly, how you call it, like polished data about this. For example, we don't know about what is Namibia's birth rate even. Remember, you and I sat with that report, with the census report. We were hoping the birth rate would be fully disclosed within that report. But we had to make some deductions, you and I there, in terms of, okay, so we had more households in 2011, but we had less households in 2011 with more people in it.
Size, yeah.
Because it was 4 to 5 people per household.
Yeah.
But in 2023, now we've got more households.
But fewer people. Household.
Which ultimately shows us all that somewhere there are two people in the country who decide to partner up, become a couple, and they only have one kid.
Yeah.
They can only afford one kid.
Yeah.
Now, Helmut, does that not explain to you probably that there is potentially a stagnation in childbirth?
That's also factored in the in the housing crisis, discussion that I shared with you earlier.
Yeah.
So that's according to the gentleman, it's it can be argued that you can say that okay, the reason behind the declining in birth rates, especially in developed countries like South Korea, is having it really bad, is that people are too busy, people are choosing their careers over having kids, but also, you cannot deny the fact that the cost of living is just one of those things that's discouraging people from, from making families, because, one child is expensive enough. Five. That's an economic death sentence.
Yep.
Now, take for example, in the 40s, 50s, 60s and 70s, one household, you'll find a couple with 5, 10, maybe 12 kids. But now, no one is that crazy. Because 10, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And first of all,
how much money are you going to spend just on food?
Let alone tuition.
How much you jump too far? Start from food.
Yeah.
Start with living space.
Oh yeah, living space.
Start with paying water and electricity.
Yes.
Because in other countries, they are willing to give the household a discount on paying things like taxes and on your water and electricity things.
So they can just afford their... that's a genius.
Because they realize, oh no, there are more people in this family. So the mother and the father needs an assistance element. We don't have that kind of a mechanism in play. I mean, here Namibians were talking about give more money to the pensioners, but the pensioners were less than 10% of the census count.
But pardon me. This is just the problem that I have seen, as you know, with my basic understanding of economics.
Yeah.
Give more money is not really a good solution, because every time you give more money, the price of the product and services also goes up. So
exactly.
You're back to square one.
Well, it actually says that we journalists shouldn't write a story that says that there is more money going to be available, because the business owners going like, aha.
Okay.
Now I can increase the
price. Now you're back to square one.
Yeah.
The only solution is whatever product that you want people to have access to, produce more of it.
But they won't. How much?
Exactly.
Because you want to write the scarcity principle, which is based upon high price, less things, high price, more money.
That's when capitalism becomes very cutthroat. But 3 minutes past the hour of 11, so that brings us to the end.
Wait. Before you end, let me factor in another thing. Okay, so I'm still on the education thing, 7.3 years.
Just before they're dropping out, but
yeah, just before the business economic guys step in. Germans stay for 17 years in education. Germans stay for 17 years in the education cycle. 17 years. Namibians stay 7.3 times in the year. In up 7.3 years in education.
You know.
That's a country with 80 million people.
minus 9.7.
That's a country with 80 million people. Helmut. Here and there, the trade-off is the government taxes you high so that you can send your children to school for free. Here, we're trying to have some sort of a tax system. But you send your children to school, but you can't afford food for your kids. So you don't know if the kids will actually concentrate at school. In some cases, in some regions of your country, you experience malnutrition, because there was drought, because these were agricultural communities. And I saw someone posting once again in our work group something about how, agricultural sector can become the sort of like the prosperity, the guiding light, the champion of some sort of economic prosperity for rural communities. Yes, it can, but it is in conflict. It will become in conflict with our industrial policy. Namibia wants to become industrial. Namibia doesn't want to stay agrarian.
So that means we need a lot of, more people skilled in the industrial aspect of things, not in the agriculture. Okay, isn't processing and the modern day farming equipment, doesn't that count,
as industrialization? But here's the thing, Helmut. That is one farmer and his family.
Yeah.
That's not a community farming on a land.
Yeah.
That's one farmer. It was like our with the John Deere example, the right to fix. The right to repair discussion.
Yeah.
It was one farmer. One farmer.
Yeah.
And he has farm hands, meaning farm workers that he pays a salary to.
Yeah.
We are not talking about communal communities across Africa who rely on, I grow my patch of tomato, you grow your patch of tomato, we live off it. Or we live together off the communal growth. There is no economy there.
No. There's consumption, though.
There's consumption, but there's no economy. Now, what happens if there's a disaster?
You're looking at the Irish potato situation on your hands.
Exactly. You're looking at the Irish famine of the 1800s. So, the discussion that emanates from this is some Africans really need to understand what they are saying. Because if you are championing education is key and knowledge is power, You can't have Namibians for 7.3 years in school, where they're supposed to be in school for 11.9 years. Helmut, we're supposed to be in school for 11 years.
Nah.
We are literally almost half of that out of school. So, dear listeners, leaving with that food for thought. If you've got kids in your house, they have to be in school. Let them reach grade 12, even if it's known as AS level, that thing now today.
Yeah.
Let them finish it. Let them pass it with the highest marks, flying marks. Because next year, universities are supposed to be going to be free. We still have to go and ask if it's going to be conditional. I want to do my honors, bro. I really want to benefit from that free university thing.
You and me both on that one.
Yeah.
But 7 minutes past the hour of six, Human Development Index 2025 report.
I mean, the report is full of knowledge, but it's full of...
It's full of knowledge that...
Full of depression as well.
Knowledge is depression, which is why a lot of people choose to be ignorant. I mean, I get it, but the thing is, one thing that you see is that the report basically dives into the into AI in a lot of sectors in terms of application.
Yeah,
but the business and economic segment guys are here.
Supposedly.
Oh, they are.
Supposedly, before he tells us to get up, let's get up.
Yeah.
Okay, guys. See you again tomorrow, same time, same place.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lüderitz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.0.
Olum nangeshefa noahara kushivifa oma akuro ekupitira mohorike radio station ayo Eagle FM enyamukuru olongaha ningekwata fano na Monica kushikondosho ipindi konorahita tuimwe heari imwe ne heari imwe nohamano that is 0817147116 mamberewa konorahita tu natu bali oheta tu vatatu ne nola no natu ninge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na opo mone oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further.